Yeah, it's taken from Matthew chapter 25, this little text which has already been read. One of the problems that famous people have is fame. They are famous people. They are people just like you and me. They put their pants on one leg at a time. They have good days, they have bad days. And they are people who, for whatever reason, have become famous. And they become famous often because they want to become famous, and then they often complain about being famous. Back in the 1860s, during the Civil War, President Lincoln would often dine in the evening, and then he would walk out the front door of the White House and take a stroll down Pennsylvania Avenue, unnoticed by most, engaged by a few. These days, not so much for presidents, movie stars, singers, athletes. It's one of the reasons, I think, why famous people and presidents stop going to church. There are a lot of reasons to stop going to church. Jesus is kind of famous, isn't he? What if Jesus showed up here this morning, walked right in here and sat down? Jesus lived before the camera, so there are no photos of him. And the paintings mostly get his hair cut wrong. Jesus almost certainly had short hair. But Jesus, especially traveling with 12 men like he did, he would kind of catch your attention. And they kind of smell like fish, don't they? And if Jesus showed up here, that would probably go viral. That famous person, Jesus, coming to your church. And him and his entourage would probably take up a couple views. They would sing. They would do the liturgy with the rest of us. And I suppose I would have to defer the pulpit to him after church. Well, I have a photo of me and Mike Wolf and the creator of the Pickers. I think I would get my photo taken of Jesus, with Jesus. Maybe post on Facebook. Make all those people feel bad who didn't get a picture taken with Jesus. And maybe I'd take him out for dinner. And maybe the 12 could go Dutch. That's a lot of... You know, not everybody believes in the physical resurrection of the dead. And I use that word physical very deliberately. There's a Lutheran pastor over in Illinois, Craig Stanford, I think. He went to the Fort Wayne Seminary, same as I went to, after he left a different Lutheran seminary that was not in St. Louis. I think the first seminary he went to was in Iowa. And then he wrote a book. And he talks about sitting in class at that first seminary, the one that's not Fort Wayne or St. Louis. And he says they kept talking about the empty tomb. The empty tomb. On Easter Sunday, the empty tomb, the empty tomb. And then one day he went all Steve Anderson, raised his hand and asked, just what do we mean by the empty tomb? And he says he kind of got crickets. You weren't supposed to ask questions like that. You see, kind of like an Alice in Wonderland thing, the empty tomb could mean whatever you want it to mean. Do you, like old people, think that it means that Jesus physically rose from the dead? You don't have to believe that if you want to. But the modern, the enlightened, the sophisticated, allegedly scientific view is that either A, Jesus was never dead in the first place. Yeah, tell that to the spear that pierced his side, drawing blood and water. Or B, he was dead. His disciples came and took the body. While all 16 guards simultaneously slept. Oh, wait. There's nothing new or sophisticated about those ideas. The enemies of Christianity have been saying that since the beginning. Enemies of Christianity were saying those things about the resurrection of Jesus. It didn't happen. Resurrection, we're not the only ones who believe in that. The ancient Egyptians believed in resurrection of the dead. That's why they mummified the pharaohs and other famous people and animals. More churches in this and other country, more churches than you know who bear the name of Christ, don't. They don't believe in the physical resurrection of Jesus from the dead. The pagan priests taught, and the Vikings believed in Valhalla, an afterlife, the resurrection of the dead. And then they converted to Christianity, and they continued to believe in a resurrection of the dead, only a better place. Valhalla was a place where you went and fought all the time. Heaven in the Christian world, the real heaven, is a place where there's peace all the time. And then the Vikings, mostly Norwegians, participated in the Lutheran Reformation. They continue to believe that Jesus actually physically rose from the dead and that we will too, but alas, alas, along came the Enlightenment that has darkened most of Scandinavia. And today, there are about 20,000 confessional believe like we do, Lutherans, in each of Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Finland. That's out of countries of about 5 million. Most of the rest do not believe in the physical resurrection of Jesus because their Lutheran pastors tell them not to. They probably talk a lot about the empty tomb. It says that the number of pagans in Norway is small, about 20,000, but growing. Like their pagan ancestors, Ragnar, Lagerthor, Flocky the priest, many of them now believe in Valhalla, the Viking heaven, where you go after you die, because that's what their pagan priests tell them to believe. So to summarize, in Norway, about 20,000 confessional Lutherans believe in the physical resurrection of Jesus. About 20,000 pagans believe in the resurrection. And the rest of them, they probably believe in the empty tomb. So this text here, I've studied and preached on this text probably 20 times. Like all the Bible, there's always something new. Always something new for God to teach us. And I look for those new things, as you know, on Tuesday morning. Study the text, words, grammar, context. And a lot of times I'll look and see what other people have to say about this text. And a lot of people have a lot to say about this text, the sheep and the goats. One person had this to say about this text, about this parable. He said, it's pretty self-explanatory. Yeah, it kind of is, isn't it? It's pretty self-explanatory. But if you don't believe in the resurrection, I don't know exactly what you make of this. If you do believe in the physical resurrection of the dead, and you do believe that one day all people have ever lived will be raised from the dead to stand before Jesus the King for the pronouncement of final judgment, it's pretty self-explanatory. Sheep over here, goats over here. You want to be with the sheep. You don't want to be with the goats. You know, people die all the time. And why does that happen? Why do certain people die at certain times? Well, God decides when you die. He's going to decide when I die. He's going to decide when you die. And that statement elicits several follow-up questions. And there certainly is more to be said on that subject, but God is the one who gave you life. And God is the one who will decide when your life ends, and sometimes life is hard. Especially, I've noticed lately with our elderly, especially those in the nursing homes, how hard it is to be isolated like they are. And it's been 8 or 9 months. And they know it, and I see it. And science is finally speaking up. Science tells us this is not a good thing, this isolation. putting people in their rooms by themselves all the time, making them eat in their rooms, it's not a good thing. I've been talking to elderly people for years, and last week, who want to die? Ready to die. It's a very common thing for people to ask me to pray for them to die. And I do. And I did. And Helma Pitts finally went to be with her babies. That's why she wanted me to pray for her to die. It's why Christians, we do not seek or embrace death, but we are not afraid of death. And if you come to a funeral here, I'm going to talk about the deceased a little bit. I'm going to talk about heaven probably more. The comfort given at the death of a loved one is knowing that my loved one is, at the moment of death, in heaven. That's comforting. If you don't have that, then you don't have much. And I never do get much comfort hearing people talk about it, what a great person fill in the blank was. And then we go out to the cemetery here out in the country to bury the body. It's what Christians do. The word cemetery means sleeping place, or what we might call a bedroom. It's not going to your room for a timeout. It is your body going into the ground in sort of a holding pattern, awaiting permission to land, and then comes the judgment day, the last day, the day of the Lord. And when's that going to be anyway? And then the joining together of that resting body with the soul, and then what Jesus talks about here, the final judgment. And it's actually more like a final public, for everybody to see. A public pronouncement of a judgment already made at the point of death. At death, your soul either goes to heaven or to hell. And it's a bench trial here. It's a bench trial. The trial is before the judge. It's not a jury trial. It's not a trial before your peers. And at this trial, it will not matter how society judges you. And I'm aware that society judges us by a different standard from the Christian standard, God's standard, the Ten Commandments, and faith. No, it's not a bench trial before, it's not a jury trial before our peers. It's a bench trial before the judge is going to decide. I had heard that Chip and Joanna, they flip houses in Waco, Texas. I've heard that they're Christians. And I was looking for an example for the opening of famous Christians, famous people who don't go to church. And so I, turns out they do go to church. So they didn't work in my example. They do go to church. And what comes up in a church of Chip and Joanna Church? Quote, here's the headline. Chip and Joanna go to anti-gay church. And I read the story, and their church sounds a lot like our church on that issue. And the author of the article, if he were judging those people, he would send us all to hell. He would send us all to hell because of the way we think about that kind of sin. But it's not a jury of our peers. It's a bench trial. It's a Christian thing to bury our dead. And that goes back to Old Testament times. Moses was buried. So was Abraham. When Jacob died in Egypt, they kept his body there for over 400 years. And they carried the body of Jacob out in the Exodus. And they lugged the body of Jacob from place to place during their wilderness wanderings for 40 years so they could bury him in Canaan. And do we see a pattern here? You know, Jacob would have been a lot easier to carry around if he were ashes. But never do we see Old Testament believers burned. Pagans burn their dead all the time. Jesus was buried. Turns out his tomb was a loner. In the New Testament, John the Baptizer, Ananias and Sapphira, Stephen were buried. It's patterned in Rome. The pagans were burned outside the church, inside the city. The Christians were buried outside the city in the catacombs, and they often had church there. And we've had church at the cemetery. It's a little bit different feel. Buddhists and Hindus, though, Eastern religion, they kind of see the body as an impediment, as inherently evil, to be burned, to get rid of it completely and free the soul from the body. So about cremation, it's kind of a moot point. I don't think I've ever done a funeral for anybody who was cremated. I would. It's just that I never have. And the reasons why people get cremated are mostly practical, seldom theological, not even symbolic. And just because something has its roots in paganism doesn't make it pagan to the point. These days, I don't think anybody thinks that cremation is connected to paganism, because it isn't. And on the last day, buried, burned, gone in the World Trade Centers, bodies are put back together. Put back together by the same God who made Adam from dirt, joined to the soul and the entirety of humanity is present for all to see. And that's a pretty big crowd, isn't it? Pretty big crowd. What about the logistics there? Well, God is in charge of the logistics, and I'm sure he can handle it. And he looks to his right at the sheep, and he commands them, come. Commands them, come. Like a shepherd does. Commands them to come, and we come, and he calls us blessed again. Calls us blessed again. So after church, you take Jesus out for Mexican. Maybe you go home and whip something up in the Instapot. Would you let him get a drink of water at your house? Would you welcome him? Would you tell Jesus to go ahead and make yourself at home? What if you didn't know it was Jesus? Would you give him clothing? Would you visit him in the hospital or in prison? Rightly or wrongly convicted. I used to visit people in the hospital all the time before they won't let me anymore. And I have visited people in prison. And I was aware. I was aware that I was at the hospital or that I was at the prison visiting somebody. I knew what I was doing. And every time the person rings the doorbell over next door or comes over here on a Sunday morning needing money for food or gas, and I give it to them, I'm aware that I'm doing that. Same thing with clothing. We are all very well aware of what we're doing when we're doing those things. But what we're not aware of, what we don't think about, is what Jesus says here about these. We call them works of mercy, acts of mercy, Christian thing. Feed the hungry, give water to the thirsty, clothe the naked, shelter the homeless, visit the sick in the prison, and bury the dead is the one added on here. What we don't think about is what Jesus is going to say on that day. Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. And now we know. Now we know what we're doing. As you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. Talking about Christians here. Talking about Christians. And not everything's about evangelism. Some things are about just taking care of your fellow Christians, these brothers of mine. You did it to me. It's hyperbole. He's not actually there. But like good hyperbole, we get it. We get it. So we get it, and you look around you, and what do you see? Here, out there, people who you are doing acts of mercy towards, you're doing them to Jesus. Now you know. This parable kind of in and of itself asks the question, if you were put on trial for being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you? And that's what's going on here. Evidence is being brought forth. I look around and I see food banks and I see mostly free water. And I see people trying to get free water to people around the world through wells. And I see all kinds of places where you can go for cheap or even free clothing. I see homeless shelters. I see people visiting people in hospital. Well, not so much these days, even in prisons. And we do. There are dead. Yeah, I look around here and I do see a lot of evidence for Christianity. Go to other places in the world, you won't see that kind of evidence. I do see a lot of that around here, but not everybody, not all the time. And that's what we mean by sins of omission. Sins of omission. That is, works of mercy we could do, but we choose not to do. It's the meaning of the word undone. When we were confessing sinning this morning, quote, by what we have done, and by what we have left undone. By what we have left undone. Acts of mercy, kind words that we could have done, but we chose not to. Those sins, too, are covered by baptismal waters. Those sins, too, are included when the pastor says, like I did earlier, I forgive you all your sins. They're forgiven, too. And it's a group effort, isn't it? These acts of mercy involving individuals, churches, groups within churches, people who do not confess Christ, but they imitate in him and his followers with their own works of mercy. We are salt. And when we do these things, we are only following our leader who showed us how. We are not Christ. But as Luther says, we are little Christ to our neighbors. Little Christ to our neighbors. And who is our neighbor? What Luther does not say is that when we look at other people, we ought to trust them, especially in Christians. We see them for what they are. They're his brothers and sisters. And that's kind of self-explanatory, isn't it? That when we do these acts of mercy for other Christians, on the last day we know what we're going to hear. Truly, I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. Enter into eternal paradise. Amen. Peace of God, which passes all understanding, keep your hearts and minds through faith in Christ Jesus unto life everlasting.